Show.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Oh, if you think we're done with this Saints-Rams non-call debacle, oh, you don't know what kind of place we live in here. This thing's going to carry on for days and maybe weeks, oh, maybe even months, right? The conversation is coming around about what can the NFL do in the future to avoid these embarrassing moments like we had in the NFC Championship game. Can they extend the competition committee? Can we review pass interference penalties better? Well, what if it's not a pass interference penalty that gets called? What do you do then? It wasn't a penalty that was called. That's the whole point of what happened in the NFC Championship game. So you can tighten up the officials and their ability to review PI penalties, but unless it's a penalty, it can't get reviewed, can it? Well, there's a simple solution to this, people. Let's not all lose our minds. And the simple solution is something Ron and I came up with yesterday, or has been around. It's in the college game, so it's not something we invented, but we brought it up yesterday. Just get an eye in the sky. Get a person in the booth that is in charge of all of this and looks down and says, hey, in this incredibly egregious non-call moment, I am stopping the game, and I, as the official, am going to tell you, you really need to look this one again. There was no flag, but that doesn't mean I can't interrupt and say, hold on, I need to look at this from above. I know it, the problem the NFL is going to have with this answer, and they would tell me if I brought it up to them. Yeah, Tony, but man, you don't want these games going 4.5 hours, and that's what could happen. We have to be really careful how we use it. Yeah, go figure that out, how you would use it. But in the case of what occurred in the NFC title game, there doesn't need to be a complete rewriting of the books. It doesn't need to be a complete analysis of how replay is used and when it is used. You know what? Just get somebody with some common sense upstairs that goes, you know what? I'm not going to intervene unless it's a absolute, absolute blown, completely something I have to step in on. And I know it will be different for everybody, but I think this is the way that everybody start breaking down how replay is going to be worked and how officials can use instant replay and pass interference penalties. It's too complicated of a question for a really simple answer. Just get another set of eyes that can go, hey, everybody down there, you totally missed this, and I got it, and we're going to get it right, and we'll take care of it. Oh, a lot more on this one, though, coming up. It's SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, good morning. Glad you could be with us, SB Nation AM. The Baseball Hall of Fame vote was yesterday. No surprise that Mariano Rivera got in. A little surprised Mariano Rivera was unanimous. This is not something the baseball voters do. They usually go, no, if Babe Ruth didn't get in unanimously, nobody gets in unanimously. Usually somebody is willing to take one for the team and not put a player on the ballot the first time around. But Mariano Rivera appeared in all 425 ballots. He becomes the first unanimous player into the Hall of Fame. I thought it was petty. It was stupid. I mean, there's so many baseball players who didn't get in unanimously just over this dumb rule, this dumb protection of history or whatever. But Mariano Rivera is a good choice. He was as good of a closer as there ever is going to be a closer. He was fantastic. He was a guy, car keys closer, if you will. You were just ready to leave when Mariano Rivera came to the game because he was that good of a shutdown. Mike Mussina is going into the Hall of Fame. Edgar Martinez, designated hitter with Seattle, is going to the Hall of Fame. And Roy Halladay is going to the Hall of Fame. And if you guys remember, Roy Halladay died in a plane crash in 2017, in November of 2017, piloting his own plane, right? It was some weird plane. It was almost like a glider, if you will, in over the Florida waters, and crashed his plane in the Florida waters. So Roy Halladay will go into the Hall of Fame. Okay. I don't know what you do in those situations. Does the family send somebody to represent?
Yeah, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here.
Right.
But do you think him dying in a plane crash helped his cause?
That's a good question. That's a good question. He had a pretty short career.
Yeah, I mean,
it wasn't a long career. But he had an incredible workload. I remember he always had complete games and he always had shutouts.
Yeah, and he was wasn't he the one who was like, I think it was him and one other guy that was always flirting with the no hitter, losing it in the ninth inning.
Yeah, exactly. He pitched a lot of innings. I mean, he for a modern baseball, he pitched a lot of innings. It's possible. Let me make this point. It does influence the way you get viewed when you die tragically, right? There is an effect. People tend to soften up a little bit on you when your story ends kind of in a tragic way. Did that happen here? Well, I mean, Halliday is a Hall of Fame pitcher, but getting in kind of quickly, is probably something I wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue. I think he's more deserving than Mike Mussina.
I do too. And Mussina, but I'll give you this. Halliday got like 85% of the votes. Mussina had been toying with it for a while and finally got in. Like, he just barely crossed the 75% threshold. So he had been pushing, and finally, all right. Just to clarify for those of you who don't know how it works, if you're a baseball Hall of Fame voter, if you're a baseball writer voter, it works differently in the other departments that also elect baseball Hall of Famers, Veterans Committee and whatnot. If you're a voter, you get a ballot. There are a bunch of names. You get to choose 10. And then the players who have to get 75%, a pure 75%, not 74.3 or 74.8. You have to get a pure 75% on those ballots to be in the Hall of Fame. And you're on that ballot for a certain period of time. That's why you hear the people say it's like his last year of eligibility. So you get on it, and some years you will go up against a mountain of baseball players that are going to get to the Hall of Fame, so you don't get in 1 year. And then some years it's sort of weak, and you might get... you might pick up enough votes. So Mike Mussina had been on the ballot. I think this was his sixth attempt to get into the Hall of Fame and finally got in. No, yeah, no doubt. Halliday definitely gets in over Mussina, but these are the four that are going in. I love Mariano Rivera, and I love he was as good at his position as anybody in baseball. But man, I'll tell you, to go through a history where Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't unanimous. I mean, think about all the players that came through and weren't unanimous all-stars. And he's the one. Everyone says, oh, this is very deserving. I don't know if it's deserving. I'm just glad that silliness is over and it's broken because it's dumb. It's really, really dumb. I don't know what made people think this was a good idea to keep the... So what if Babe Ruth didn't go unanimous? That was the people in 19-whatever's problem whenever they started voting for this thing. Who cares?
Yeah, the only thing I found disappointing with Mariano Rivera getting in unanimously is all the writers for years and years and years didn't honor the closer position.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one where it's like, closer, he didn't pitch enough. He only pitched an inning, blah, blah, blah. I'm not doubting that Mariano Rivera isn't a Hall of Famer. But it is kind of funny to me that, okay, are we now acknowledging the closer position as being a position?
Yeah, the closer position is now the one that gets the unanimous vote.
Yes.
Like, not Ken Griffey Jr., who's a great fielder and a great hitter, right, who got 99.3% of the votes. He was off on just three ballots. Three people didn't vote him in 2016. Three people did not vote Ken Griffey Jr. an all-star. But a closer, and you're right, who people said, well, I don't know if you could. Can you put somebody in the Hall of Fame who only pitches one inning, even if they pitch that one inning effectively? That's silly. There were people who made that argument, and now that's the position that goes in unanimously? Yeah, whether it's Mariano Rivera or not is irrelevant. Right? That position had been kind of dead to the Hall of Fame for a while, and now it's finally getting steam. Look, this sport has evolved. The deep statistics. Baseball had me for a long time, and I got to be honest with you. There was a certain point where sabermetrics came in, and I was losing track of all the statistics and the meanings. Right? Like, I was going along with it just fine, and then I veered off the road, and now I see statistics, and I have no idea what they mean. Yeah, I have no idea what they are.
All of a sudden, they came out with war.
Yeah, like, war, and now there's B war. Yeah. I don't want to know. Don't send me on Twitter. If I want to know, I'll find it. Trust me. I just, I'm not that much of a math nerd to start throwing these sabermetric statistics all over the place. And to me, I watch the sport. I kind of know who I want, who I think should be a Hall of Famer. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes I'm surprised. And then I have to do a little digging and realize, okay, maybe didn't see that guy enough. And he is a Hall of Famer. Like I don't know Edgar Martinez's batting average. I know he was a fantastic DH. I don't know his batting average. I mean, I don't know the deep statistics of Edgar Martinez. I just went, yeah, that seems reasonable. Martinez was really, really good. He's a really good hitter at a time when Seattle had some good offensive weapons. He was one of them. Great. Perfect. Yeah.
And there's another one that were, you know, I mean, the top two vote getters, Mariano Rivera and Edgar Martinez are position players that normally didn't get any love from writers for years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, how can you love a DH? All he does is hit.
Yeah,
he doesn't play in the field except, you know, later on in life when the Major League Baseball switched it to playing National League games, you know, American League and National League. For years, it was always separate, and now we have I can't remember what the term is called now. When they play the National League.
Interleague play.
Interleague play. Thank you. Sure. See, that's why you're here.
Yeah, I try. Like, I covered Todd Helton. I told you yesterday. I thought he would go in the Hall of Fame. He only got 16% of the votes. It's unlikely he is going to. I don't know. Todd Helton.
Hey, he's probably going to be written off the ballot.
Probably. He's probably not going to make it. So, for those of you who want to know about Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, we'll get into this a little later. Both of them got 59% of the vote and change. It is very unlikely that they'll get in. Curt Schilling got more votes, more higher percentage than both of those guys. So the steroid issue and all of that is plaguing Clemens and Bonds. But Mariano Rivera, again, 100% of the vote. He helped the Yankees win 5 World Series titles. He started as a starter. He didn't do very well as a starter. That's the old line, right? What's that line? Relievers are failed starters or something like that. Then he was in 1996. The Yankees, it's one of the better teams that they had because the Yankees for a long time, you know, had always built a team for years, got the best free agents, right? And the 96 team wasn't short of that. They had Jimmy Key, you know, they had David Cohn. But they also brought up their young talent, the talent that they were developing. And of course, Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter were on that. Andy Pettit were on those teams, young guys through the Yankee system, raised the Yankee way. Right. And Rivera was the setup guy for John Wetland, who's now had a very awful post career. But Mariano Rivera was the setup guy, and you could watch in 95 when the Yankees made the postseason for the first time in a long time. Rivera was in Seattle in the King Dome back in the day, and it was loud, and he was very good as the setup guy for the Yankees. And then when he took over the closer role, lights out good. I mean, just lights out good. The problem is a lot of Yankee fans, they just know in their hearts. This is a hard thing to sort of grasp as the Yankees, again, money and they buy players. But there is something special when a group of Yankees, right, a group of young players emerge through the system, come up young, very young, early 20s, and then leave. There is something sort of when Rivera left, for example, the night that Andy Pettit and Derek Jeter walked out to the mound to get him. And like this emotion, Derek Jeter's final at bat where he got a base hit at Yankee Stadium, where he got a base hit and drove in the winning run and then just circled the field. The Yankees can always replace guys. They can always go, they're in the Manny Machado sweepstakes, or they're in this sweepstakes for this pitcher. They'll just trade this guy or some assets to get this guy. They're always going to do that. But for a team that has been famous for doing that, for a team that has been just famous for, oh, yeah, it's like rotisserie baseball for the Yankees. They just get whoever they want. The Rivera, Jeter, Pettit group is always going to remain special because they were raised Yankees and they became superstars. They became superstars. Pettit may never get in the Hall of Fame, but Derek Jeter is going to. And those three were really the catalysts of the 5 World Series championships. So for Rivera to get in of the one is, I think, for Yankee fans, I think there's going to be a lot of pilgrimage to Cooperstown because these guys are special. It's one thing to say I played with the Rays and I finished with the Yankees and I'm going to wear a Yankee cap. Rivera is a Yankee. He's a consummate Yankee. So that it's a pretty good feeling for New Yorkers because they don't get that a lot. Yankee fans usually get like superstars coming to New York and, you know, doing their thing, like Roger Clemens, and the list goes on. Tino Martinez, the list goes on. But Rivera was raised a Yankee, so it was a good moment for him. All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number if you want to join us on the show. All right, the NFL, it is a hard beast to kill, and the numbers prove it. We'll have that next, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Tony D and Ron Culver. I'll get to the ratings for the games coming up. For the AFC and NFC championship games, when your battery loses its power, you lose your ability to get out, get around, and get things done. When it's time to replace your battery, trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the Super Start battery. That's the exact fit for your vehicle. Whether it's reliable, economy, hardworking premium, or powerful extreme, O'Reilly Auto Parts has the Super Start battery you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So the numbers are in for the AFC and NFC championship games. Weird numbers. Okay, let me just tell you this. Let's start with the kind of NFC title game did not have a huge number in terms of what normally is expected. The ratings were actually down. It drew a 27.1 overnight rating, or roughly 31.2 million viewers. That's down. I know a lot of you don't know what the rating numbers mean. That's fine. But 31 million viewers tuned into the NFC title game. Okay. The AFC title game, those numbers were huge. They were up 26%. They had nearly 54 million people watch the AFC title game. So it's good news and bad news for the NFL, but it still goes to prove an overall point. This is a league that is hard to kill. Remember, we weren't that long, very long ago, that there were protests, boycott the NFL, I'm never going to watch again. Well, the I'm never going to watch again crowd must have been really small, because 54 million people to watch a non-Super Bowl event is a lot of people to watch a Sunday night game. That is a lot. That is a big number. Sitcoms, television shows are not getting those kind of numbers. And they just don't. Sporting events get those kind of numbers because of the unscripted drama and the fact that there's, you know, fan bases and people. The NFC championship game, here's my explanation of the two that are just, I mean, listen, it's 20, if I'm doing the math correctly, it's 23 million more people watch the AFC title game than the NFC title game. That's a big number. That's a big gap between the two games. But think about this for a second. The two teams in the NFC title game, I hate to say this because I love Drew Brees and the Saints, but who's the villain in that game? Where's the drama in that game for those outside New Orleans and Los Angeles? And even in Los Angeles, the Rams are still getting their footing, you know, is a fan base in that city, right? Where's the compelling storyline of that game? If you're selling me that game, and you have to sell these games to a larger population than you or I, who would watch this game no matter who was in it. Okay, I don't care who's in the NFC Championship game. I would watch it even if it wasn't my job. I would watch it anyway. Many of you are in the same boat. You just watch it anyway. It doesn't matter. But where's the storyline in that game? Who's the villain in that game? Who is the dragon that needs to be slain? Because the AFC Championship game had it, right? There's no fan base, right, that is more looked at with jealousy and sort of disdain than Patriot fans. So everybody outside of that group that did watch the AFC Championship were watching to see if Tom Brady and the Patriots could be slain by this upstart Chief team, which, who, by the way, are really fun to watch. Now, the Rams and the Saints are fun to watch. The Rams and the Saints put up 30 points a game during the regular season, right? Jared Goff, Sean McVay, Drew Brees is 40 years old, slinging around. Saints, New Orleans, fun city. It doesn't compare to the Patriots, where you're going to watch them win or you're going to watch them lose. And whatever the reason you decide, that's what brings people in. I think also too, and I think Sunday night is going to just draw more people, right? Even if Monday was a holiday, it just is. Sometimes in the afternoon, even if you want to settle in and watch football, there's other things tugging at you. There's other things that you gotta take care of on a Sunday afternoon. And I think Sunday night, the ratings are naturally going to go up. The 20-plus million people in the difference between the two games, that is pretty staggering, but not really when you think the Patriots are a team we are just attracted to, whether negatively or positively. That's just the way it is. The Patriots have huge numbers when they play, and I think a lot of it is to see and to share in their demise should they lose. Right. I know I've told this story many times, but I use it as an example to prove it. The Patriots went 16-0 in 2007. And yet go to any Super Bowl party around the country outside of New England, and you would have found most people in the room with no dog in the fight were pulling for the Giants. We didn't want that team stained by Spygate to be 19-0. We don't want them to have success, again, outside of New England. And I think if you're a Patriots fan, and I know a zillion of them because I grew up in New Hampshire, they revel in that. They love it. They love that people hate their team. They love the whole, all right, bet against us t-shirt of Julian Edelman. They love that. I mean, I saw it all weekend. I'm still seeing it today from my friends on social media who are from that area. They love the fact that America is jealous. They love the fact that, because, and I will give them credit, and I will give them this. Unless you're 25 or below, and I don't, maybe you could extend it a little bit, because you know how old are you when you adapt an NFL team and you really remember rooting for them and suffering the losses? Like my son always talks about, like when he was a kid, he loved hockey and he loved the Avalanche, and the Avalanche would lose and he would cry when it was the playoffs. But I asked him the other day, so you remember that? He goes no, because he was like four. You about 6 or 7, 8. Is when you like embrace a team and you kind of remember, oh, I remember rooting for them when I was a kid. So if you're about 25, you know nothing but the Patriots dominance. But if you're 30 plus, that team stunk. That team was terrible for a while. They went to a Super Bowl against the Bears. They got beat. They had the number one draft pick. They had bad coaches. It wasn't until Bill Parcells came in, started to turn them around. Then remember, even after Bill Parcells left, right, they still dealt with Pete Carroll for a while, and Pete Carroll wasn't the Pete Carroll he was today, right? Then they get Belichick, and even when they got Belichick, like Belichick, but we don't know what we're getting into. And then Drew Bledsoe gets hit by Mo Lewis, and it's like, oh, well, we lost our starting quarterback. Here comes this kid Tom Brady, and the rest is history. But it's not like they're this celebrated team through the era, through the decades. They're not. But recently, over the last 16, 17 years that they've been good, they have gotten the villain mentality. And we like watching villains. We do. That's a story. That's a storyline. The Patriots should lose to Kansas City. You want to watch it, right? If they should overcome it, well, okay, I'll watch it too. But the Saints and Rams didn't have that. The Saints and Rams had good guys. Sean McVay seems like a likable coach. Sean Payton and the Saints are a very likable team. We don't really have anything there. And I think also to a lot of the same effect, I think Los Angeles still building themselves up in a city, and a Super Bowl championship is going to help. But there was a city that didn't have, I mean, there was a report that more people in Los Angeles through metrics watch the AFC title game than the NFC title game. That's absolutely explainable. I totally believe those numbers. Sure. There's no rich tradition of the Rams over the last 20 years. Nobody was there for 20 years. And as we talked about last week, the Rams had moved out of Los Angeles into Anaheim, so it wasn't like they were the city's team. That's the Raiders department. That was the Raiders for a while before they moved back to Oakland. So I think the Patriots carry with them some this villain mentality, and we like to watch it. And I think that's why 54 million people. But again, This is why I waited this out when everybody was talking about the Kaepernick kneeling and the anthem protests, and this is going to kill the league. You can't kill this league with one thing. You're not going to kill it with the concussion story. You're not going to kill it with an anthem protest. You're not going to kill it with scandal, bad officiating. This league is 24/7. It moves forward. There's controversies, and they just get by it. Yep, they'll take a dip. Yep, it'll affect the bottom line for a little bit, but eventually something will pop up, and it'll come right back. You think you're going to kill the NFL? It's going to take a lot of people and a generation and another generation to put this league down. Right now, if you have 54 million people watching a non-Super Bowl game, you ain't dying. All right, you ain't dying. It's a very, very big dragon, and you ain't going to kill it with anthem protests or the concussion issue at all. SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
At Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. Ron with two N's is where you can hit us up on Twitter. I remember the multitude of blackouts on TV in New England because they could barely get 50% in the stadium. It's one of the reasons I severely hated the Jets and Giants because I had to watch them when the Pats games were blackout. I remember that too. I remember, I hate admitting this because, you know, I'm a bandwagon Steeler fan. All right. I was a Steeler fan when they were good in the late. I was a little kid. Steelers were good. My brother was a Cowboys fan, so I went the opposite. Steelers Cowboys was the rivalry. But nobody that I grew up with was like a real diehard Patriots fan. They were like, the Patriots weren't very good. So you rooted for other teams that were good. Later they became Patriot fans. Like they switched. Like my friends that I grew up with, in the 80s, finally went, listen, I'm from New England. I'm a Boston kid. I'm going to root for the Patriots. That's my thing. And they actually, as they grew up, became, you know, switched. The early days, they may have been a Raiders fan or something, and they went, nah, I'm a Patriots fan. But no one I grew up with when I was a kid, I remember seeing Patriots gear in the wintertime. We all had, like, NFL hats and, you know, NFL jackets and stuff like that you used to get from the Sears catalog. And none of my friends had Patriots stuff. Like everybody else was like, they were all wearing gear of their dad's favorite team or some team that was really popular, like the Steelers or the Cowboys. Patriots weren't very good. And now they are one of the greatest Super Bowl franchises in the history of the sport. And it's, again, it's because of Belichick and Brady. And that's one of the reasons why I don't begrudge Patriot fans their arrogance. I mean, they put up with a lot. I mean, a lot of bad football. And a lot of, a lot of times the team looked good, then they weren't really good. They never really kicked in. They never kicked in a time, especially in the 80s, where the Red Sox were going to the postseason. The Bruins were always a playoff team. Bruins played in a Stanley Cup, I think, twice in the 80s. Celtics were in the NBA Finals, always competing at least for an NBA championship. And the Patriots were an afterthought. And then that one year in 85, where they were the wild card team and won games all the way through, squished the fish, beating the Dolphins, bury the Bears, and then they got slaughtered by Chicago in the Super Bowl. Except for that one year, they just really didn't have anything. They really didn't have much. I mean, one time they had Doug Flutie. I remember Doug Flutie played for him. But then Bill Parcells came in. And when Bill Parcells came in, they had the number one pick in the draft. And they took Drew Bledsoe. And, okay, so we put up with the Dick McPhersons and the Rod Russ and the terrible years. We have the number one pick. We have Bill Parcells. And let's do something with this thing. I told you the story about when Robert Kraft bought the team, there was a conversation about moving the team to Hartford. There was even a rumor that they would move to St. Louis, which was vacant at the time before the Rams moved there. I mean, it was a weird time in the 90s, early 90s with the Patriots. It was a weird time. Robert Kraft bought the team, stabilized it a little bit. But when Bill Belichick came on board, remember Bill Parcells, this is another slap in the face to Patriot fans that they had to put up with. They went to the Super Bowl. They beat Jacksonville in the AFC title game. They beat the Steelers in the divisional round because I was there. And then they beat Jacksonville because I was at that game. I was the only Steeler fan in my group, and it was horrible. Then they beat Jacksonville, went to the Super Bowl. They played Green Bay in the Super Bowl. Parcells didn't even take he was talking to the Jets about taking their, that's how much disrespect Parcells had for the organization. He was like talking to another team. I don't even think he was on the flight home from that Super Bowl. So can you imagine being a Patriots fan? You lose the Super Bowl to Brett Favre and the Packers. You don't know who your coach is going to be. Your coach is off to the Jets. And you're like, wait a minute, what? Wait, what? Coach is leaving? He's not even with the team. He's talking to the Jets while he's supposed to prepare for the Super Bowl? Right? Pete Carroll comes in, does a couple of years. And then finally, Bill Belichick, who's supposed to take over the Jets. If you remember that story, Bill Belichick was the coach in waiting, right? Parcells was going to move to the front office. Belichick was going to take over the spot with the Jets. And he says, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I'm going to go to New England. I liked it when I was in New England. I'm going to go to New England. And the rest is history. So I don't begrudge older Patriot fans at all the arrogance that they have over this run. Not at all. Now, if you're 20 and you're 22, it gets a little annoying because you haven't lived through the agony, right? I mean, it's tough. Like, I was when the Red Sox win these World Series now, like every now and then they get a World Series championship, but they're not the 86 years my great grandfather last saw it. When they don't have that, like, I remember the pain of 86. I remember the pain of Roger Clemens not pitching as well in the postseason, getting ejected in 88 against the A's. Or was it 90, one of those years? I remember my friends just going, we're never going to win this stupid thing. We're never going to win it. I'm never going to see it in my lifetime. So you know what? If Red Sox fans want to be a little bit more arrogant, God bless them. It's the same thing. I don't have a problem with it. I don't. But I know a lot of you do because you didn't grow up in the area. You don't have the same background as I do, right? But yeah, there was a time where the Patriots were yuck.
No, I mean, for me, what I remember of the Patriots, because that was the first real blowout that I remember in a Super Bowl. And, you know, you go back and you think, okay, you have the top two teams in the NFL. They're playing against each other. And one team shouldn't have even been on the field because the Bears just absolutely destroyed the Patriots every which way. I mean, you had a defensive lineman that scored against them.
That was the hardest thing. Again, you're right. That was the hardest thing was not feeling. Look, would the Bears have beaten the Dolphins? Yeah, maybe part two, because the Dolphins beat them during the regular season. Maybe part two, the Bears do all these adjustments and blow out Miami. I don't know. But the reality of it is it just didn't feel like a real Titan battle.
No, not at all.
Because the Patriots were such an underdog that year, road team playing on the road. Listen, I don't begrudge that team going to the Super Bowl. Hey, they went, they did it. I mean, God bless them. They did it. But again, if you're selling the game, you're selling the Bears against who? I mean, too many people weren't really familiar with the Patriots that year. They weren't a juggernaut. They weren't a team that was on the same level as that was a big upset in the AFC Championship game with Craig James running down the Dolphins' throat. That was a big deal. That was a big upset.
They didn't have any star players either that you could gravitate towards.
Yeah, Tony Eason was the quarterback.
Who was that?
People barely remember who he was. Right? Oh God, who was their? Nah, I'm not even going to try because I'm going to butcher it. But nevertheless, it wasn't a Super Bowl between two. Like, you could watch Super Bowl 19 the year before and see Joe Montana versus Dan Marino. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl 18, even though it was a blowout, Washington was the defending champions and the Raiders, you know, were a team, right? You could go back and say, okay, even if the games weren't played out, they were between the two teams that I felt like I should be there. The Patriots were this kind of outlier. And again, great story, great run. Squish the Fish was a wonderful time, but it didn't provide America the huge 80-85 matchup between the Dolphins and the Bears that many wanted. They were the spoilers.
The Bears were all Hollywood. You know, coming out with the Super Bowl shuffle before, and we never had seen anything like that. I was like, "Whoa, what are these guys doing? Look at the arrogance of these guys!" But you know, we surrounded ourselves with them. We were excited to see this Bears team play. They were for that part. I mean, they were America's team. We all wanted to see the Bears win. And I mean, I remember years to come, the Patriots were just a laughingstock. I mean, they got blown out by the Bears, and then every single year it was like, I mean, they were pretty much the Browns. How we viewed the Browns, that's how we viewed the Patriots for years.
Yeah, I'll have to look up the records. Dick McPherson was the coach. He's terrible. Rod Russ was terrible. I mean, it was just a yuck period of time. That's how they, you know, obviously how they got the number one pick in the draft to get Drew Bledsoe. But they've had a very interesting history again with, I mean, again, a coach that did travel with the team on the way back from Super Bowl 31, what year that was. I mean, come on.
You don't need him there, right?
Right? I mean, he just didn't want to be there anymore. He wanted to be the coach of the Jets. Okay, go be the coach of the Jets, I guess. Right? And then, but they land, through all of that, they land two of the biggest, you know, influencers of games in the history of the sport in Belichick and Brady. It's a pretty remarkable story. I understand where those numbers, like I was talking about before, I understand where those numbers come from. The Patriots are a draw. People say they're sick of them, but they're not sick of them. Because the day they lose, you want to watch it, right? For the rest of America, that is. For New England, you know, of course they're going to want to win. But
or you have people like me who, you know, begrudgingly admit on air to everyone that I found myself towards the end of that game when Brady got the ball back with 2 minutes, a little over 2 minutes left in the game, and then heading into overtime. I found myself saying, you know what? I actually want to see the Patriots win now.
Yeah, I wonder how many people had that same feeling. That's a you brought up something good yesterday about that. I wonder how many people were like that, who don't hate the Patriots. They just don't. The Patriots never did anything to them. And then went, you know what? Screw it. Why wouldn't I root for this wild story of this 41-year-old quarterback going back to the Super Bowl?
Why don't I want to side on history?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, because this is, I mean, what we were watching is historic. It's unfathomable that this team is going to their 9th Super Bowl. This collection of players, or basically it's just Belichick and Brady, are going to their 9th Super Bowl.
And that's I have friends who are like, I'm not watching the Super Bowl because I'm like, why wouldn't you watch the Super Bowl? You watch the Super Bowl all the time, and you're gonna tell me because the Patriots are in it again, you're not gonna watch it? What logic is that? If the Patriots are winning, turn it off. But I mean, I don't
just like
if you don't want to see that. I know, right? It's that's got to be it. Right?
Clickbait material.
I'm not watching the Super Bowl. What are you gonna watch? What's on TV? What are you gonna do? Read a book? Spend time with my family. Oh, you know, there we go again.
TV, they know not to put anything against it.
Of course.
You can watch
Absolutely.
The Puppy Bowl. Go watch the Puppy Bowl. That's fun.
Yeah, that was the fun thing. I used to watch that all the time with my little girl. Now she's older. She's like, puppies are cute, but I don't want one. 800-777-2907 is the number. It is Tony D and Ron Culver, SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels with an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. How many times have you pulled up behind another car and noticed that one, two, or even all of their brake lights or taillights weren't working? For me, it seems to happen all the time. You want to catch up to these folks and tell them, but they wouldn't know what you're trying to say anyway, and if you start pointing, they'll probably come back with a few hand gestures of their own. Since that person could be one of us, why don't we make it a point to check our lights once a month? All you have to do is get somebody to push down on the brake pedal, walk behind the car, and check all three brake lights and the taillights. Might as well walk around the front and check the headlights while you're there. It only takes 3 minutes, folks. I did it the other day, and sure enough, my center brake light was burnt out. And bulbs fail all the time, guys, so even on new cars. So check your newer car, too. Don't take safety for granted. This is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels are brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more of my tips, go to letstalkwheels.com. Find us on Facebook under Let's Talk Wheels.
Choose a new path this year at the Jeep Start Something New event, where you'll find great deals are just the beginning of the great adventures. Make a grand entrance in the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever, because a brand new year means you deserve a stylish new look. And nothing looks better than confidence, which you'll find plenty of in the Jeep Compass. With over 70 standard and available safety and security features, if it's a new peak you're looking to conquer, find the SUV recognized for reaching the top in the Jeep Wrangler, awarded the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year. Or, if all you need is a getaway, start your road trip in a Jeep Cherokee with up to 31 mpg highway. But no matter where the new year leads you, start it with a great deal at the Jeep Start Something New event. Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards over its lifetime than any other SUV. EPA estimated 4-cylinder 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know, the pressing issue for me in the Super Bowl, the question I needed answered, all right, will Tom Brady retire at the end? We'll tackle that later. The Rams defense, how does it go up against Brady in the offense? And how conversely does Belichick deal with Sean Brady's, Sean McVay's offense? But you know what the real question for me was? Chick-fil-A, will it be opened at Mercedes-Benz Stadium Super Bowl Sunday? And apparently, Ron, that answer is no.
No.
Chick-fil-A will not be open Sunday at the Super Bowl, continuing with their tradition of not opening on Sunday so their employees could spend time with their families, even if it's Super Bowl Sunday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which I'm sure And to the company's credit, I'm sure they could find, I mean, they could find volunteers to work.
Yes, of course.
Concessions, like, obviously pay them. I'm not saying volunteer, like, work for free. I'm saying, like, hey, guys, we're going to be open Super Bowl Sunday. I know we don't work Sundays, but would any of you like to work the concessions? Obviously, you'll get paid, but anybody want to give up their Super Bowl Sunday and work concessions at Mercedes-Benz? I bet they would be a ton of employees.
Free trip to the game?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
sure.
Who says you can't take, like, your five-minute break and just kind of walk around the stadium and look down and go, hey, look at that.
I'm sure their employees would sign up.
Now, I guess the big question for me will be, will the NFL put something in that place?
Yeah, that's prime real estate.
Like
baby.
A pop-up.
Yeah, right?
Fast food place. You know, one thing I was really excited about, because we've all known this about Mercedes-Benz Stadium, has the cheapest concession prices.
Yes, they do.
They're not waning from that.
They're keeping
the prices. So, if you're going to the Super Bowl, just know that, hey, $20 gets you a ton of food, where most of the time you can maybe just buy a hot dog for $20.
That's about it. That's about it, especially at the Super Bowl. Darren Rovell used to do that. I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Darren Rovell used to post on Twitter, like, at the Super Bowl, he'd be like, burger with fries, and it'd be like $18.
Right.
I'd be like, what? No, $18?
I mean, hopefully that, you know, gets enough television time, or, you know, talked about enough that other stadiums go, you know what? Yeah, we've been price gouging for a long time. Maybe we can drop nachos down to $2.
Yeah, exactly.
Or offer free refills on drinks.
I know there's a lot of people who go to the Super Bowl who can afford whatever ticket price there is, but I'm sure there are a lot of people who are like, ooh, God, this is great, but at the same time, oh boy, I'm going to be working that third shift part-time job soon. Like, I'm sure there's always, like, somebody that's dumping some family emergency fund into a once-in-a-lifetime Super Bowl ticket. SB Nation AM, the Chiefs have a big decision. Tackle that next.